Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Since her celebrated band Person played its final gig in December of 2016, singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Rosalie Cunningham has been quietly reinventing her career and is emerging from her self-imposed musical hibernation as the visionary solo artist she always was. Rosalie's eponymous debut album, due for release in early 2019, is a result of an extended period of reflection and will contain her strongest and most daring songwriting to date, ranging from a 3-minute Blackbird-esque nod to her creative hero, Sir Paul McCartney, to an epic prog rock saga that will take the listeners on the mother of all sonic journeys. The album features a full range of musical styles, showing off to the full Rosalie's incredible voice, vocal range, and playing ability, and is sure to delight both old fans of Person and hopefully many new fans. The self-titled album will be available both on Digipak single CD and 180-gram vinyl format on July 26. In support of the release, Rosalie and her band will be touring the UK in July this year, with further dates to come. Her creativity first reached the wider public in 2007 when she founded her first professional band, the all-female gothic psychedelic outfit Ipso Facto, releasing 3 singles and a mini-album, touring as support to Magazine and The Last Shadow Puppets, and becoming the new darlings of the festival circuit. After Ipso Facto's split, Rosalie immersed herself in the session world, guesting with numerous bands and artists and appearing on TV programs, including Later with Jules Holland, BBC Electric Proms, and NBC's Jay Leno Show. However, the burning urge to cultivate her own music was never far away. In 2011, wearing her psychedelic influences, even more proudly, Rosalie's next move was to launch the internationally acclaimed Person. For Rosalie, her creative spring has finally blossomed, though not without a few birth pangs. She explains, "After Person came to an end, I continued to write songs, not for an album, a band, or anything in particular. It was purely cathartic, being subconsciously released from the shackles of writing music for a band to perform live, let me express myself more honestly. Some of the lyrics are quite close to the bone, and I found myself exploring new genres." Please welcome singer, songwriter, and musician Rosalie Cunningham to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Rosalie.
Hello, Ray.
How are things over?
Thanks for having me on the show.
How are things over in England?
Very warm, actually, for a change. It's lovely over here.
What part of England are you?
Southend, which is very close to London. It's like the nearest beach to London.
Oh, really? Huh.
So it's like about 30 miles east of London.
So the new album comes out, but you're gonna do a lot of live dates around pretty much around the London area. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we're going to do, I say a UK tour, it's actually just an England tour, so
right. Sorry,
Scotland and Wales and Ireland. we're going to be doing more dates. This is just what we've got booked in so far, and we've got some some European ones penciled in at the moment for September, October. But this one, yeah, it's the first time I've played my own material anyway in 2.5 years. So I'm very nervous and very excited.
Well, let me tell you, you're an incredible artist. I interview a lot of Prague women because I think they're awesome. You know, I'm friends with Annie Haslam from Renaissance.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and Sony.
I was looking through the list of people that you've interviewed on your Facebook page, and I saw her come up quite early on. But Jesus Christ, like, it did make me nervous. Spoken to so many legends.
Well, I think you're going to become one. I got news for you. You're incredible. You're very.
That's very kind of you to say.
I think you've got the personality and the mystique. You remind me a little too of Sonia Christina from Curve Dare. I don't know if you know Curve Dare. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course I do. Yeah. I'm a big Curve Dare fan long before I met her, but I've met her a few times now. Actually, funnily enough, my old guitarist from person is now in Curve Dare.
Really? I didn't know that. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, they're not doing an awful lot, but. It's still amazing that you get to play with them.
That's awesome. I tell you, Person was a great band. I loved all the music. When I first heard them, the last time I heard anything that I loved so much that was, you know, resembled like the 60s or the psychedelic thing was a band called the Dukes of Stratosphere, which was...
I love those guys, XTC.
XTC,
That album is just... Yeah, I'm addicted to that album.
Isn't that incredible?
25 o'clock.
I think we got the same taste.
Yeah.
Why did it end? I think you said once that there was no other place to go, really, in the band. Is that pretty much it? Or?
It wasn't so much that. I think maybe I said something along those lines at the time on social media.
Right.
It was a little bit difficult to be honest about it at the time because the biggest reason, it was as most breakups are, it's not just one reason. It was a combination of, like, lots of different factors. mostly, though, it was just industry stuff. We were in contracts, management contracts, mostly, that we couldn't get out of and that weren't working for us, and it just was kind of made sense. I'd been wanting to do it anyway. It was an inevitable thing that I would break up the band and go solo, but I was just, things were going so well that I just kept putting it off. So for years, like year after year, I'd be like, okay, well this year maybe.
Right.
But things were just going up and up, and I thought, well, it would be crazy to end it now. I'm having such a good time. And then I wasn't having a good time anymore because of the industry crap, you know.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like that industry crap.
Yeah, well, it was, we just kind of, there were personal difficulties too, but I think they were brought on by the industry stuff anyway.
Right,
so we were very, very good friends, and we all loved each other, and we had an amazing time for 6 years, so I don't regret anything, and it wasn't, you know, this traumatic musical differences kind of breakup. It was just like things weren't working in Person Camp anymore, so I had to move on.
Were you influenced at all by the record company to do certain things, or was that all you guys?
No, we weren't at all influenced. There were a few things that upset me where they wanted to kind of, not, I wouldn't say control, but direct things in a different direction. And I just always, time and time again, would put my foot down and not let it happen. So I think eventually they took me seriously and realized that that approach wasn't going to work with me. But they did, there was, like, for instance, like DMT, the Dive Magic Theatre album was rejected completely, and they said that they were going to not release it and drop us. And I had to stand my ground and say, no, I'm very, very happy with this.
Right.
And eventually they did release it, and it got really good reviews, and it kind of, like, launched us to the next stage of our career. But, just facing things like that all the time.
Yeah, you called the sound, I guess, vaudeville carny psych? Is that how you call it?
Vaudeville carny psych. Yeah, that was just, like, something that, I don't know. It kind of works.
I like that. It's different. I've never heard that before. you coined a new phrase there. but Person won so many awards too. They they were nominated for the new band of classic rocks, Rock and Roll of Honor in L.A. and the Vanguard Award and Progressive Music Award in London. They were certainly on their way. It seemed like anyway. But you got to do what you got to do.
Good things were happening.
Yeah.
It was exciting. Well, I'm just looking forward to that all happening again. I took far too long out.
Well, I listened to the you know, bits and pieces of the new album. I guess it was a teaser on YouTube, and I really liked what I've heard. You want to talk about the new album and what we can expect?
Yeah, I thought that you'd heard it.
Well, I didn't hear no, I didn't get the album. All I heard was a teaser so far.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. We should definitely send that to you, Rachel.
I'd like to review it.
Let's talk about it. What do you want to know?
Well, tell me about it. What did you expect to accomplish with it? And, you know, when did you write the songs for that album?
Well, a couple of them were sort of in the sort of nucleus form during the last tour that Person did the US, actually. And I was just sort of tinkering about with bits. I wrote one of the songs, Nobody Hears, whilst on the road in America. And that's about homelessness problem, which kind of makes sense. We saw a lot of that. Then the rest kind of just came slowly over the 2 years I had out, really, because because of the breakup and the industry kind of, the animosity towards that side of the music industry anyway, I was just very reluctant to jump into something that meant, putting myself in the public eye or signing a deal or anything like that. So I was writing, but it was not for an album or a release or any kind of plan. I had no plan.
Right.
I was just kind of writing because I'm a songwriter and I have to every now and then when something comes into my head. I didn't really realise that I had an album's worth of songs for a while. And a few things happened that sort of beat my confidence down in those 2 years. And it wasn't until I met my current partner, who's playing in my band now, and just sort of showed him a few demos and went, oh, yeah, I guess I've got an album together. Here's a few demos. And he just listened to them all in my sort of home studio and was just like, Jesus Christ, this is fucking great. This is the best stuff you've done. Why are you not doing it? And I was like, oh, I don't really know. I just haven't really thought about it. I've just been sort of a bit of a recluse. He kind of gave me the confidence to announce that I was doing it and then record it and sign to a label and all of that.
So who's playing on the album? How many musicians do you have going?
There are no one that's in the band currently apart from myself and Ross, my partner.
Right.
It's all credited on the album. But they were session guys, good friends of mine, but session guys. And I also play a lot of the instruments myself as well.
So who's going to be on the tour? Who do you have on the tour?
I actually have Raph from Person back in the band.
Oh,
after
really?
Going through about 15 drummers in the last 2 years, I finally have gone back to Raph. Because he's fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't go there sooner. I guess I thought it was a step backwards, but it couldn't be anything but a step forwards. He's back in the band, and it's great to play with him again. Bass player is a guy called Alistair Mitchell, who's played with lots of bands from over here, Trembling Bells, Lucifer. I can't remember off the top of my head. He's played with lots of people. He's a very good bass player. And then we have Lee Spreadbury on keyboards, who has his own band, Guru. He's just a keyboard wizard kind of guy. He's got this station of just like several keyboards and a move to the side and wears capes and glitter, so he was instantly in the band. And Ross and myself. Ross plays guitar and I play guitar.
You play a few instruments too besides guitar, is that right?
I play drums and keyboards and bass and guitar. That's about it.
That's awesome. So you can actually do a solo album with just you.
Well, that's how I record mostly. A lot of the Person stuff. Well, most of the Person stuff is all my playing apart from the drums, and then on a couple of tracks I'm playing drums as well.
Wow. See, I'm glad I interviewed you early because you know once you become very famous, it's going to be hard to contact you. I really believe you're going to make it. I mean, with the right connections and everything, you're awesome. I mean, you're the new generation of Prague, you know, and that, you know, that mold that came from Annie and Christina and all those, you know, very talented women. So, the album, the teaser had a lot of great reviews just on YouTube. Did you look at them all?
I did.
Yeah.
I tried to get back to a few of them as well. It was, I was very, very relieved when I saw the response because it's been a long time. And
yeah.
I was guessing, really. I had no idea how people were going to respond.
Well, you've got a following.
I put together this little video.
Yeah.
I didn't want there to be... I did actually put together a sort of very amateur home video because Ross filmed a lot of me in the studio, and I put together like a kind of clips of me recording in the studio and at home and all of that. And I just thought that's far too distracting. I actually just want people to just listen. So, yeah, I decided to do like just the album cover sort of shifting colours. So that people just paid attention to the music, and they all love it. There's not a bad...
Yeah, you've got a good following. You got a very good following. Mm. Are you going to be open to some collaborations with some, you know, famous people down the road, you think?
Oh, I'd love to. I don't know if they'd love to with me. I'm apparently very difficult to work with.
Why is that?
I don't know. Ask everyone that's worked with me.
Are you tough in the studio? I mean, are you a perfectionist? Is that it, or what? What is it?
Yeah, I'm a complete perfectionist and a control freak. And,
right.
I guess when I'm in it, when I'm kind of in the creative mode, should I say? Like, I can't see the wood for the trees. I can't listen to anyone else's ideas. Extremely stubborn, really pig-headed, to be honest. But that's what gets me the results eventually.
Sure, it's a good way to be. I know a lot of producers that are that way. So, yeah, they produce some great albums. I think Todd Rundgren was like that.
Yeah, I bet.
Now, I'm going to say this honestly and very sincere. Your cover of Strawberry Fields is the best I've ever heard.
Do you think?
I think.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That was just something I did with my dad. Occasionally, me and my dad play music together. I guess he was the one that introduced me to music.
Right.
And so it was just a nice thing for us to do together. It wasn't... I didn't do it, you know, for anyone else to hear. We just stuck it on the internet and people liked it.
It was well done. I mean, I've never heard anything like it before. It was like spot on. Is your talk about your dad? How old's your dad?
I've got to work it out. 56.
Oh yeah, he's younger than me. Is he a musician?
I played with him I played with him on Saturday actually. At a yoga festival that my mum put on in my hometown. My mum's a yoga teacher, and she put on Southend's first yoga festival, and so we had to play some music that was kind of appropriate, and we didn't really know what to do, so we kind of just played George Harrison songs on a loop acoustically.
That's pretty cool. I've never heard of a yoga festival before. That's neat.
Yeah, it was very disorganized. Imagine like a load of hippies that have never put on an event in their life trying to run a stage.
You know what? I think we were both born in the wrong time. I should have been doing this back in the early 60s, in mid 60s. Instead, I was, I was a kid in the 60s. And I remember the 60s, but I was more impacted, you know, and I was in radio and everything in the 70s. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. You like a lot of the same music I do. You're a big Genesis fan, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm a Genesis fan.
Well, I need to get you and Steve Hackett together. I think that would be a good mesh.
Fuck yeah.
I've had Steve on the show several times. He's a great guy, man. He's awesome.
Yeah, he is really cool. I've seen him play a few times. I've not met him. I know people who know him. So eventually, hopefully, we'll cross each other's paths.
Well, sometimes I get people together. I mean, I got... The Runaways together with Susie Quattro. That was her, you know, because I interviewed Susie a lot of times. And so sometimes I hook people up. So, yeah. I love Genesis. The favorite album I like, I love A Trick of the Tail. That was my favorite.
Me too. That's kind of the one I kind of end it at. I can't really go much further than that.
Yeah, I could see you doing a lot of those songs. Yeah. I could see you doing a lot of those tracks, you know, like Ripples and
yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, Steve. I talked to Steve about that album. He said that he felt, of course it's whimsical, but he said it felt like a very Mary Poppins type feel to some of the tracks, and that's what they were kind of going for. So
Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins, yeah. Like Entangled. Entangled was very Mary Poppins, is what he told me.
Okay. I'm not sure if I get that.
Here's some of the songs.
It's less Mary Poppins than a lot of their other albums. It's less kind of pastoral, and it's quite driving, some of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think they were big Disney buffs.
Right.
Yeah. Here's some of the covers I'd like to hear you do, okay? Let's see where I put this here somewhere. One of them was Season of the Witch.
Oh, yeah.
I like to hear...
I've been known to cover that sometimes.
Oh, you have covered that?
Well, in the company of friends while quite drunk at home, but yeah.
And, of course, one of your favorites I like to hear you do, and it's probably due to come back, is Tomorrow Never Knows.
Yeah, I've also done the same with that song.
Really?
I kind of live in my home studio, and we have instruments set up all the time, so there's a lot of jamming happening here.
Well, you got to put it on an album in the future. And
the thing is, with that song, it's like, how can you beat the original? It's impossible.
Yeah, but you did it with the Beatles song.
No, I did not. We did it because it was the 50th anniversary of it, and it was a nice thing to do with my dad. I don't think that it anywhere near came close to the majesty of the original, and I wouldn't ever claim to come close to any Beatles original. I enjoyed doing it. I actually did a cover of Maybe I'm Amazed with my dad recently, that you might like to hear.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. Is it on YouTube, or...?
It is, actually. I haven't shared it because I wasn't entirely happy with it. But I kind of am now, with a bit of distance. If you don't take it too seriously, there's some pretty cool stuff on it. We kind of imagined it we imagined if the Beatles had stayed together like one more year.
Right.
And all of the music that they did in 1971, like separately. Imagine if you kind of consolidated the best of into a Beatles album with George Martin producing, with like orchestration and stuff. And that was our concept. Me and my dad get excited about this kind of thing. So that was the concept, and we did a cover of Maybe I'm Amazed, reimagined as the Beatles in 1971 with George Martin producing.
Is your dad involved in any of your, can he produce,
Yeah, he doesn't work on any of my stuff, no, we keep things very separate there. He's a bit like me, so if he,
right.
we very, very rarely work together because it ends up getting quite heated quite quickly.
That sounds like me and my daughter.
Huh?
That sounds like me and my daughter. We're the same way.
Yeah, I take after him, obviously. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm very set in my ways of working and my ideas. If I have an idea, I'm stuck with it. It's very, very difficult to change my mind. And he's the same way. So if our ideas clash, then arguments happen.
Yeah. Me and my...
He never works on my songs. I sometimes work on things like covers we can do because it's not going to personally offend either of us.
Right. He probably listened to all the same music I did growing up, huh? Pretty much.
I guess so. I don't know what you like.
Well, I like everything. I mean, I can go from prog rock to Frank Sinatra. I'm all over the board, really. But my favorite's always been prog rock.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, probably similar stuff then.
I like the guitar players, Robin Trower, I like Zeppelin, David Gilmour. Yeah. I'm a big Pink Floyd fan as well, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Robin Trower's nephew was actually the drummer in my band for a couple of weeks about a month ago.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah, he was in the band for a little while. He played drums on Ride on My Bike, which is the first track on the album.
Yeah. Yeah, Robin's on tour right now. He's a good guy. I'll mention that next time I talk to him. Huh.
Well, maybe not.
No, he didn't make...
not in the band anymore.
he didn't make the cut, huh?
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's funny that you go... a lot of people go through a lot of drummers, in bands. It's funny.
It's the bane of my life. I'm cursed. I really am.
Huh.
I think it's the... I really, really got on well musically, like that kind of telepathy thing with Raph, the drummer from Person.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that again with somebody, especially a drummer, playing the kind of songs that I write.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's not music by numbers, and it's not a particular genre. It's kind of lyrical drumming, and if you don't get my style of songwriting, you just don't get it.
Right.
And it's impossible to have that kind of telepathy thing with someone where there is no kind of framework. Like, it's not blues, it's not, you know, something that, it's not something predictable. Well, prog isn't, anyway, but it, and he just got it. And mm-hmm. so finding someone else to fill his boots has always been difficult, so that's why I eventually asked him back.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great drummers out there, and I guess finally you got one.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Two other songs I want you to do in the future. Genesis, Dancing with the Moonlight Night. Moonlit Night.
Moonlit Night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, and here's a song. Here's a song that it needs to come back in a prog way. You remember Mary Hopkin? Those Were the Days. I can hear you doing that.
I do a cover of that too.
Do you really?
You're chasing these ones. Yeah,
that's
I do a
weird.
Cover of that.
How about that? That's very strange.
I make it much heavier. You know, like when Vanilla Fudge used to cover sort of pop tunes but make them really sort of fucking heavy.
Exactly.
And extend them with solos. That's what I do with those.
Huh. That's awesome. I wish I could hear these tunes somewhere, you know?
They exist within the realm of these four walls, or however many walls are in my flat, but yeah, they never really leave. I should probably film some of these sessions.
You should.
Maybe I'll bring it out on stage someday. It does really work, actually, really work, and I enjoy doing it. I enjoy the drama of it.
Yeah, I saw kind of a you guys goofing around a little bit, and then there was an interview on YouTube with Person, and I guess you guys were acting like you were... It sounded like the interviewer was high. It was pretty funny, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I know the one you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was.
Yeah, I think everybody was.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that, what are the marijuana laws like in England? Because over here, we're getting, you know, pretty soon we're going to have marijuana legal in every state.
Well, it's completely illegal here, but no one really takes it seriously.
Right.
It's like, you know, especially where I live, because I live right by the beach and along the seafront, I cycle up and down the seafront most days, and just everyone's smoking joints. And no one gets pulled over for smoking a joint unless you look like you're hustling or something, like you look like you're fucking dealing out the back of your car.
Right. Well, that's good. So you really don't get arrested.
No.
Yeah.
Nobody. Well, maybe it's just me. Maybe I just, like, police don't approach me because I don't look like a criminal.
Well, you're lucky. I haven't been so lucky. I got to say one thing, man. You're to coin a phrase from the 60s, your outfits are out of sight. You dress incredible. How do you, you know, I've never seen you with the same outfit, and you look awesome. How do you do that?
Well, for the majority of the day today, apart from I was teaching a guitar lesson this afternoon, but for about 6 hours earlier, I've been hand sewing. I've got a really sore neck from just looking down and hand sewing. So, yeah, a lot of it's handmade.
It's handmade.
A lot of it is kind of charity shop and thrift store and vintage store kind of stuff that I adjust. I enjoy doing that. I find it a very soothing exercise. It's like, you know, something that isn't rock and roll, and it's like knitting or something.
Right. So you make your own outfits, huh?
I make stuff. I mainly adjust and sort of customize already existing clothing. But I do make stuff from scratch sometimes.
That's incredible. You're very talented. I got to hook you up. Did you say...
You wouldn't say so if you saw it close up.
Did you say you knew Annie Haslam? Are you friends with her?
No, I wish I did.
Well,
no, I have friends who are friends with her, but I would love to meet her.
I'll hook you up and maybe give you her email address. I'll talk to her first, but, you know, she does a lot of her own, she's got like a clothing outfit too that she actually paints. She's a very good artist. And so she she paints her paintings on the, of clothing, and she also
really.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I was looking into this earlier. I was actually googling clothing paint because I Well, the thing I've been stitching earlier is a pair of jeans that just were sort of holes, but I love a pair of jeans. So I'm covering them in patches and, like, iron-on patches, but also, like, different patches of different pattern materials in the holes. And I was thinking, I'd rather just sort of, like, paint something on them. But
right.
And, yeah, I was wondering if people did that. So I looked it up, and people do actually paint, like, actual pieces, like an actual painting on the back of a jacket or something.
Yeah, she's good at it. She paints on guitars, on musical instruments, and things like that as well. She's quite the artist, as a matter of fact. It's pretty cool, you know.
I have pictures of this online.
Yeah, she's got a lot of stuff online, and she sells her artwork too. It's amazing how musicians, you know, they're so artistic. You know, they do all kinds of other things as well. You know, besides music. You know, it just all runs together, I guess.
Well, we can't do most things that other people can do, so we kind of have to make up for that.
You mean, like, tolerate people in the studio?
Yeah, that kind of thing, or just general organizational, like, logistical life skills, doing some rubbish at those.
What were you like in school?
Very, very bad. Good. I mean, academically smart, but got suspended all the time. They threatened to get rid of me for good so many times, but I don't think that they could because it was bad on their kind of school record. It was a very good school, all-girls school. And I was just trying to get out. I just kept doing things to get myself suspended because I wanted to leave.
Right. What did you do after grade school? Did you go to the university? Or?
I didn't go to college. No, I didn't do any of that. I moved to London when I was 16 and joined a band.
And joined the band, yeah. Huh. Sound like the Runaways. The Runaway story. Yeah, I wasn't too good.
I was very sure from the age of about, I started gigging at 13, and from that point on, I was just like, well, there's no point in going to school. This is stupid. I know what I want to do. And so that was my attitude.
You know, I used to, when I was in school, before I started driving, I used to skip school, take a taxi to go buy concert tickets. I was so crazy with concerts, you know. That's all I ever wanted to do was party and go see rock concerts back in the day. So, yeah, I straightened myself out at the end. But, you know, I think you were the type of person that could skip school and still have good grades. I hated those people because I skipped school and my grades were no good. You know, you got away with
it. It's only because I hated my teacher. My teachers and I, well, not all of them, some of them loved me. My music teacher and I were very good friends. We were really close. She was very supportive of me.
Right.
But some of them, they just absolutely fucking hated me, and I just wanted to just prove them wrong.
Right.
The things that they'd say about me, I mean, they could never get away with the shit that they said about me now.
Right.
Like, they say things like, you know, she'll never make anything of herself. She's the kind of girl that would end up like blah, blah, blah. To my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't really say that about a kid. But so, yeah, I really, really hated them, and I had very cool liberal parents, as I told you about, and they were very supportive of me, and they said, well, like, Rosie, if you don't want to go to school, that's fine, just study at home and do your A-levels, do your GCSEs, sorry, just go and do your exams, and, like, we'll help you revise and pass, like, so that was cool. I kind of just went in and got, like, mostly A's just to say, fuck you. I got an A star in music, and then mostly A's in everything else.
Oh, my God, I'm jealous. I'm telling you.
It was just a big fuck you, because all it really is just remembering things.
Yeah.
Like, going to school and being academic isn't being smart. It's
right.
Just fucking remembering things.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I couldn't remember things. I was partying too much. I couldn't remember anything.
She was good. She was like kind of cheater.
Yeah. I assumed you partied in high school, which I did as well. And I don't know how you could still remember things.
Yeah.
Because I did.
I don't either.
Man.
I managed it somehow.
Yeah, I hung out with a lot of people like you, and they graduated, and I had to make up a half a year in summer school because I didn't pass. just because I was stubborn, I didn't.
Well, it was there was a lot of cider and hash, as I recall. But LSD didn't really enter my realm until after GCSEs. I remember actually that was my celebration for finishing all my GCSEs. So when I was like just turned 16, I was like, okay, I've read enough about this fucking LSD. Where is it? I'm doing it.
Where is it? Let me try this thing. Yeah, LSD was big when I was in high school. That and the thing that destroyed a lot of people. that really was big in my area. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area in Maryland, and PCP was introduced. Angel dust.
That's dangerous stuff. I've not tried that, but yeah, I don't think I would. There's too many other good drugs. Why would you bother?
Yeah, that tore up a lot of people. Yeah. When you were with Person, didn't you support Kiss on a tour?
Yes. On the tour, on the Kiss cruise.
On the cruise.
You know bands do these cruises.
What was that like?
The Kiss cruise was mental. It was like sort of Kiss families.
Right.
So, you know, your average American family, like 2.4 kids, but like they're just mad. Like it's like they're supporting a football team or something. So they all kind of like paint themselves up and have the shirts and all the memorabilia, all the merchandise, and like they fucking live Kiss. And they just and we were stuck on a boat with them, and we had absolutely nothing to do with Kiss. So that was kind of weird. It wasn't a tour. It was like being stuck on a like holiday.
Right.
That you weren't. You know what I mean?
Did you meet the band?
Yeah, they were cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, we hung out with them a bit.
Oh, that's
yeah,
cool.
They were a lot more down to earth than you'd expect, apart from Gene Simmons. He was exactly what you think.
Right, Yeah. I had a couple of the Kiss guys I interviewed, but I never got to Gene for some reason. I don't know, he kind of blew me off for some reason.
He was funny. He really was funny. He kind of... he played with a lot of the guys' egos in the band. Like he did watch us, and then he made some comments to the guys in the band that were he's just a weird guy. He was definitely messing with their heads.
Yeah, man, they're so tall when they're in their outfits, aren't they?
Yeah, enormous. I mean, I think they're enormous anyway.
Yeah. What? Let's talk about your spiritual sense. What kind of things are you into? Like, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are actually, you know, believers of UFOs, and they, you know, we're not alone. And some of the guys from the Moody Blues have actually seen UFOs, and you know, which is pretty cool.
I've never seen a UFO, but I think that it would be absolutely like insane to think that we're the only living like beings in the entire universe. That's
right.
Just mad. Anyone that's like, well, I mean, I don't want to keep going back to this. It's not my religion, but anyone that's tripped knows that's not true. and other than that spiritual side, I mean, I practice yoga and I meditate.
Right.
That's something that's quite important to me. And I routinely take mushrooms, so that's kind of how I see God. And I know the word God is absolutely loaded, and especially in America, so I don't want it to be misconstrued. How I see something that is greater than us as a human race, and
right.
You know, something that gives me like my higher self and a purpose. If that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, it's important to believe. I mean, no matter what religion you are, it's important to believe. You know, you have to believe in something. And I don't know. I don't understand the atheist point of view, because how did we get here?
Either.
You know?
I've never been that way. I think I've always believed in God, whatever you want to call that, but
right.
I've always believed in God.
But there's too many things that are, like, impossible to explain. You know, like, why is the sun a certain amount of distance from the earth and we don't burn up? You know, little things like that. You know, there's a reason for that. And, you know, when you have the birth of your child, you know, I have four grandkids now. And when you see the birth, you know there's a higher being controlling all this. I mean,
yeah.
You know, God could be an alien.
It's pretty arrogant to think that it was just us.
I mean, God could be an alien. That's not ruled out. But you know, somebody's controlling us. For sure. So what are you most proud of as your music career expands here? What are you going to be most proud of? You're doing your own thing?
In terms of the music career, well, it's early days to say that this is my most proud moment, because I haven't
right.
really done much with it yet. I'm really proud of the music that I've recorded and written, but it's I've not even played it live yet. Most proud moment. I think it would be touring America with Person. because that was just, it's an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
America is so different from Europe, and we were supporting Ghost, so obviously we were playing, we were kind of tagging along with them and stealing their fan base and getting the adulation that we get, I guess, didn't deserve by ourselves, because we were playing to like 2,000 people a night in like beautiful theatres across America. It was an experience that we were not really worthy of yet, and it was an amazing feeling, and it just gave me a glimpse into the future of like that's what I hope to be headlining myself soon.
Well, what about other countries? Like, you know, I could see you in Japan, making it big in Japan. Amsterdam.
Yeah, I would love to play Japan. I've actually, that's cursed. It really is. I've been due to play Japan like 3 times, and right. Something bad happened, and I couldn't go.
Yeah, because they love the they love classic rock, and they're very, very knowledgeable. Them in Amsterdam, yeah. You could be perfect fit in Amsterdam for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We played at Perpentate Holland a few times, and we went down really well there. But Japan, I think they're very obsessive, and they're very also right. very into visual aesthetic kind of stuff. So I'm kind of a package in that sense, and I think that they might buy into that, which is cool.
Do you have somebody that's kind of orchestrating these tours for you? Because I know that's a lot of work.
No. We like I said, my kind of not animosity, but. I really wanted to try and do things as independently as possible from the music industry.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
I know. But my boyfriend feels the same, and he's also kind of been stung in that sense. And so he just thought, well, the contacts I've made, why don't we just try and get this thing off the ground ourselves?
Right.
Which we have successfully in the UK, and we're now booking a few dates in Europe. But it's not... We are going to have to sign with a booking agent, and we're going to have to sign to all these... Well, I've signed with a record label now, and I've signed with I just signed a publishing deal the other day, actually.
Right.
So it's all starting to come into place again, and nothing's independent anymore. But that was kind of a dream.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your boyfriend in the band itself, or is he just helping you out?
He's in the band. He's kind of co-managing with me, okay. And he's playing in the band.
What's his name?
Ross Wilson. Well, I don't know if you'd like me to say. His artist name in his own right is Roscoe Levy. He plays kind of like quite American, actually, like Southern blues kind of stuff. Very different from my music. We both have kind of had to... We've been quite humbled having to play each other's music, because I'm playing bass in his band and he's playing guitar in my band. And we're both very stubborn songwriters, and so it's been a good exercise for us having to swallow our pride and play each other's music.
Yeah, it sounds like you're very open to experiencing other genres, though, which is a good thing. If you can play...
Well, this is from my mouth. Ask him. He says that I'm really stubborn and I can't... He thinks I can't play a 12 bar, so... I always have to put something difficult in it.
Right. That's the prog side of you, right? Prog, you got to make it difficult or sound difficult, or else it's not prog.
The thing is, it's so not intentional. He thinks that I'm being difficult to just like make things confusing for him. And I'm just like, why don't you feel in five? Come on, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he just doesn't get it.
All right, you got to lighten up a little for your boyfriend now.
No, I'm awful at playing that kind of the music that he plays. So we're both really struggling, but trying hard to play each other's music. But other than that, we get on very well as a kind of we're managing the thing together. We're very excited about going on the road together and all of that. So, good.
So eventually, you'll come back to the US, right, and do some dates.
Yeah, I really, really want to as soon as possible. It's expensive for us to come over.
It is. Yeah. Well, if I can help in any way, let me know. I do know some venues in my area in Florida, and you know, I'm from D.C. originally, so I know some venues up in D.C. as well. And I have helped put, you know, artists in venues. I'm not a promoter, but I do, you know, I know the promoters on the venue, so I can help there in any way. So.
Okay. Well, yeah. That would be useful to know. In terms of a booking agent over in America, to do a US tour, you have to have an agent, really.
Yes.
It's like logistically, it's a nightmare trying to get around. Even if you plan it so well, it's still like 10-hour drives between each city.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be very difficult.
Crazy.
Very difficult. Yeah, and then you want to hit all the hot spots. You know, you want to hit the north, northeast, New York, and Philly, and DC, and then of course you want to go to the West Coast. So
well, it's so big that to make any real impact, you have to be over there for about 6 weeks.
Yeah. So it's so much easier in Europe, right? Because everything's not as far?
It's so easy. The tour that we're doing of the UK, I mean, you barely even call it a tour. It's like a pub crawl. The cities are, the longest drive is 1.5 hours.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. That's awesome. You know, I talked to, I'm name dropping, but I can't help it. But Jim McCarty of the Yardbirds, the original drummer from the Yardbirds.
Wow.
And we were talking about, you know, all the great guitar players that were in the Yardbirds, you know, Page and Clapton and Beck. They all, in the UK, they all live so close together. And, you know, when they didn't even know each other, but growing up, they were like 30 minutes away from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Does England still have the art schools like they used to? Because a lot of famous people came out of those art schools and became legends. Do they still have those?
They still have art schools in London, yeah. It's you don't see as many musicians coming out of them now.
Right.
But I suppose that was a burgeoning art form in itself in the early 60s. It's not new anymore. So maybe it's not so exciting and appealing. Now I tend to see people going more into fashion or like more like contemporary art.
Right, right. And so many great people came out of those art schools, you know, and it was amazing. You know, they had instant success right out of school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, Rosalie, here's your big question that I ask everybody. I get some very interesting answers. If you had a wish, and I always reflect this to the movie Field of Dreams, because, you know, I don't know if you saw the movie or not, but he got a wish and he got to play baseball again and for a brief moment. But if you had a wish to, you know, play or perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Well, it's going to be very obvious, but it would be either John or Paul. I think I'd be too intimidated to play with either of them, to be honest. So maybe I'd go with someone a bit more approachable, like Harry Nilsson.
That's so funny.
But of course, no, John or Paul. Probably Paul, because the way that he is in the studio.
Yeah, you and Paul would be a good mesh, you know. But better hurry, he's getting old though.
I've met him a few times.
Oh, did you? Really?
I was a complete mess. I just turned into a puddle.
That's great. I love to hear when, you know, the artist heroes and how they react to them, because it's hilarious. I talked to John Anderson from Yes, and he met George Harrison, and he said he was a nervous wreck. I said, John, you're in the band Yes. You're a great, you know, you're a legend, man. He says, yeah, but he's a Beatle. He's a Beatle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that trumps anything, right?
It's so funny. Even Ozzy Osbourne had the same reaction to meeting Paul McCartney. He just melted, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, he's such a nice guy. He's really approachable and he's really kind to me. And I actually cried on one of the times I met him. I just cried. I didn't know what to say.
Did you hug him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured that. Rosalie, do you have anything else to add? We got the new album coming out. We're all very, very excited. You're going to be touring Europe, hopefully the U.S., as soon as you get an agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking of hitting up my old agent, actually, with Person, because he was very good. He put together a few really good tours over there. So that's all I have to say, really, that I can't wait to go over to America play, because it's the most fun I've ever had playing
with
the audience.
I wish all good things for you. I think good things are going to happen. You're very, very, very talented. You're an incredible artist, and you know, yeah, your timing's right. And we need someone like you in the music industry. I just want to thank you again for being on the show. All good things to you, and we're very, very excited about the new album, and And good luck. If there's anything I can do, go through Billy. I'll give, you know, you can ask Billy for my email or message me on Facebook, and I'll talk.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I'll talk to Annie as well and see if I can hook you guys up to at least talk about the art thing. Okay.
That would be really, really cool. I'm going to look up her artwork right now.
Thank you, Rosalie.
Okay, thank you.
All right, all the best. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Pre-order the new self-titled solo album from Rosalie Cunningham at www.cherryred.com or .co.uk/product/Rosalie-Cunningham-Rosalie-Cunningham-CD-Edition. That's if you want to go directly and order it. Or you can just go to cherryred.com. www.cherryred.com. Look up Rosalie Cunningham to pre-order the album. You can also go on her website at www.rosaliecunningham.com, or she's also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Rosalie Cunningham. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with Rosalie Cunningham, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the music happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest. It's real news, people! Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. And coming soon, Rockstar, The Rockstar Chronicles by Ray Shasho. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio. Station 1.